Episode 69 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is January 26th, 2012. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my adversary, my competitor, my brother, James Furlough.
That is what it's going to be happening, at least in a week or so.
Exactly.
Getting after it. But we prefer not to compete, but rather just, you know, to live harmoniously.
We're not here, you know. This isn't how does Jim Harbaugh say it? This isn't about us. This is about the teams that are going to be involved in the game.
Exactly.
We got to be focused on the players. And who are the players? Well, I'll tell you what. The players are the corporations that are part of this whole tech opera. And so this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations dealing back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, we're going to have a short disclosure.
Yes, I worked for HP. However, during this podcast, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. And I'm also going micless, so that's going to be a little interesting. My new one's in the mail, so I've come to recognize that the static is my fault. And so I'm spent some of my fun money to get another cheap microphone. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah. But dude, I did the research. You could buy some really, really nice microphones.
I know, man. Dude, this is
hundreds of dollars range.
I have become an acoustic expert in the last week, and I feel like you've done
that's yeah impressive.
I know, it is impressive. Yeah, I feel like you got the input side of all the technology, like, you know, what's out there in the mic realm, and I was doing all the output stereo system. I had a moment of inspiration, and it turns out I've had a pretty good education when it comes to signal processing and power supplies and stuff. And so when I finally decided to actually look into how to build speakers and set up a sound system, like, I had all the basic components. I just never, like, put it together. And so I got really anxious. And thankfully, our mom talked me down from dropping a couple $100 on components to start building a speaker system that I wouldn't be able to use. But I was just really stoked. I was like, I figured it out. I can do it now. And I want to build it. But I didn't.
All right.
Anyways, and I'm sure that'll come. I'll find a reason to talk about that in future episodes, because now it's something that I know. I'm an expert.
Cool.
I actually have a lot more research to do. I'm a little too early in the process. But if you want to follow us throughout the week, and we'll talk about stuff similar to what we're talking about, especially in our daily life, you can follow us on the Twitter machine. I am at Matthew D. Furlough.
I am at James Furlough. What'd you say?
That's my handle.
Oh, that's my handle. Sorry.
And then the Furlough Bros show is at Furlough Bros. You can also find all this information and so much more if you go to furloughbros.com. It's the hub of our digital universe. All of the links to all the articles we talk about, any videos and cool stuff is going to be there. So if you're interested, curious, check it out. And, you know, and we frequently ask if you enjoy the show, you like what's going on, feel free to tell your friends and mention us and, you know, give us a shout out and tell people, recommend, whatnot, because that's the best way to get the show to spread. If you don't like it, keep your mouth shut. And
it's easy.
But yeah, that's it.
Cool.
And you know what I've decided, James? We definitely need to start a controversy. We need to start a controversy.
What do you mean?
So, okay, so last week...
I'm trying. Okay, sure.
Yes, so last week we covered the... What was that, the Dish Network?
The CBS, CNET, Dish.
Yeah.
Hubble Space Telescope. Yeah, no. Hopper.
That's close. And because what it is basically a DVR that hops over commercials, which was not happy for CBS. CBS owned CNET, told CNET, when CNET decided to give it the best in show for CES,
they tell
them, how about you not do that? And by doing that, they gave it so much, we talked about it, and we would have never talked about it because it's not that cool of a piece of technology, in my humble opinion.
As someone who does not subscribe to cable, it was not very high on my radar.
Exactly. And now we know about it. We've told all our friends about it. It became this big thing. Why? Because of controversy. Well, I got another fun controversy that sort of came to a head. There was this dude. His name's Kim.com. Legally changed. He ran a website called Mega Upload that only thieves and dirty, dirty criminals used. And occasionally actual users with legitimate data. It was a big file upload, file sharing site. It was like a high powered form of Dropbox is really what it was. I actually was a subscriber for about a month and a half, 2 months. And I definitely wasn't using it for illegal purposes. And see, the thing is, when you subscribe to a Mega Upload, they're like base package. All it allowed you to do was to download really fast and do multiple downloads and stuff. You could do unlimited downloads, but it was all like really slow and you could only do one at a time. But if you paid $10 and you had a really good internet connection, I don't know, at the school that you went to on a regular basis, where you got like 100 megs down, you subscribe, and all of a sudden you can download HD quality TV shows. Like all of them, literally every TV show ever in a couple of hours. I only had it for a month or two because that's all I needed to get 7 years worth of entertainment.
Oh man.
So there's that. But what was interesting about this, I say all this as not just to, you know, confess to crimes. But because...
Which, just for the record, the Furlow Bros does not condone stealing of other people's copyrighted material.
Of course
material,
not. Who said we stole it? No, this is not a truthful story. This is a, what's the word? It's a, it's a...
Supposable?
What's that kind of story where it's, man, I can't remember
parable?
The word. Maybe a parable is the one I'm looking for. It's a story. It's like a made up anecdote that is common amongst
fable?
People who understand. Fable is not the word I'm looking for. I don't remember what it was. That, not important. The point is, this is not necessarily, you know, my experience. It is. Oh,
okay.
It totally is.
That was very specific for it to be a random story.
Legal disclaimers. Anyways, the point was the site got shut down because people were using it for illegal. They were not policing what material was being uploaded into their site, what was being downloaded, which made them criminally accountable. So. They live in New Zealand, and the New Zealand police and I think it was the FBI, they all kind of went in and took them to jail and shut down all the servers. Turns out you can't legally do that, so they had to let them go. But it generated a tremendous amount of interest. People were really curious. Mm. So Kim.com announced he was going to be reopening up Mega Upload under the new name Mega. And I know. And
His last name originally wasn't .com.
Oh no.
Right?
No. It's Kim, KIM space .com. I mean, it's
right. Oh no, I know. I was just like, wow, how crazy would that be if your last name was .com?
Yeah, it just turns out, just so happens that you're a giant online, you know, person. And not just physically, although definitely physically. But what's interesting is like he had already been convicted of other crimes before all this happened. He's actually kind of a criminal. he's not like the coolest dude, which is part of the problem. Is he was arguing, I shouldn't have to regulate this site, and all the governments were like, yeah, but you're still using it for criminal activities. So Mega is this like where it's like this thing's going to be clean. He's not going to do any illegal. He's not going to use it for illegal activities. For himself, he's going to keep it completely clean. He's just not going to regulate it. So basically, everybody was like, wait, Mega Upload is back. We can use it for what we used it for. But he now has, you know, now can't, you know, he's got some more protection. So what was the, so the, so this is the big question. How many people are using it? First day usage, it's so many people. The first day turned on early this week. First day it turned on, they crashed the site because of how many people, the server farm, because of how many people were hitting
it.
They signed, they registered 1 million new users. I don't say how many of those are paying, how many of those are just like registered, but still, 1 million new users in the first day, and by like Wednesday or Thursday, it was top 15 websites visited in the world. It was unbelievable.
So let me get this straight. It's still doing essentially the same thing?
Yes.
Huh. All right.
Yes.
Wow.
From what I mean, maybe they're doing something different. I didn't register yet. So maybe it's being used differently, but from what I understand, the purpose is to bring it back and just to have it be a separate entity from what it was. So that is one legal battle, and now Mega is back up and for another legal battle.
I'm sure that'll end well.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be pretty. It's one of those ones where it's like, you know, use it as a secondary backup. You don't use it as your primary backup. But my point in all of this is that controversy sells, James. We have to get somebody to try to shut us down because that is one heck of a way to generate interest.
I think our logo gets us halfway there. We just need to keep it going.
You what?
I think our logo gets us halfway there.
I know, exactly. We gotta get more controversial, man.
We need to start spreading some of our own insider Apple information.
That's right.
That's what we need to do. I mean, it will only really last one hype cycle. But for that one hype cycle,
I can say, that's all it takes, man. If you can do that occasionally, get a bad reputation, people will pay you tons of money. And that's, you know, look at Gawker. Let's be honest. Wow, that was. But anyways, I thought it was interesting.
Wow, that is interesting. I guess. So not nearly on the same, level. But have you ever used SimpleNote?
Yes, I have. Not a lot, but I have used it.
That is the one and only note-taking app that I use on my phone because it has the iPhone app and the web interface, which means I can take, you know, that has obvious benefits. And it's all, you know, synced over the internets.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, it's better than Apple's built-in notes app. You can also tag stuff, you know, so I like have, yeah, you can add tags to your notes so it's easy to searchable. You can add someone's email to it, and it will automatically share that note with the person. You know, it's got some cool features to it. And as of recently, they have been kind of like going through this new server deal, trying to get a little bit more reliability. Because I will admit there have been times when it's been highly unreliable. To the point where Lifehacker kicked it off of its recommendation as a number one, and it like got slotted to like number. They were like, we want to love you, SimpleNote, but you're just not reliable enough for us. So, they had some big news this week. They are getting bought. By Automattic, the company of WordPress.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it turns out that the Automattic founder, Matt Mullenweg, and who should be like a personal hero of everybody.
Yeah. I hate him, but that's for personal reasons.
Ah, yes. No, you should hate the dancing Matt. Not Matt Mullenweg.
No. Matt, what's his last name?
Mullenweg.
Matt Mullenweg owns MA.TT.
True.
And he has the URL I want, which is, you know, MA.TT. I know, and that's why I hate him, because we're not friends. We can't be friends.
So anyways, that guy who everyone but people named Matthew like. he has been a longtime fan of SimpleNote.
Yeah.
And so he bought it and was like, no, we're not shutting it down. We're actually just going to make it better. And nice. we're adding people and resources to it, which is like normally the opposite of when a company like this gets bought.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, well, yeah, we're not closing down the service, but active development is ended. And then it's just kind of like you throw your hands up, export everything, and go find a new one.
Right.
And
for the record, if you do not like SimpleNote for whatever reason, iCloud automatically syncs all your contacts across your devices, and you just go to iCloud.com and you can do all your notes from there. You can view and edit them.
Okay.
For the record.
I appreciate the record. Can you tag stuff and share them with other people?
Maybe. I don't know.
Worth looking into. Yes. Anyways, I saw that and I was pretty pumped. I was like, oh, cool. And apparently they said, where was it in this? They said that so they first met him. And so after they bought him, or after, yeah, you know, Matt bought them, he was like, oh yeah, hey, by the way, we also just bought SimpleNote.com. So we can now point to that URL. You're welcome.
Nice. Because
they were like SimpleNote.com/AppSpot.com, or it was a weird URL. So they were just like, whoa, you're amazing. We love you. Thank you for buying us.
I would say Matt is actually a pretty cool dude. I mean, he's incredibly talented and has been unbelievably successful. More reasons for me to not like him.
That's pretty cool when you when you get bought and he's like, so I know that there's this URL that you've always wanted, and so you've been putting up with the subpar one. Yeah, I went and bought that URL for you. You're welcome.
Yeah, because I'm rich and can. You're awesome.
Yes, we love you. And so, you know, so I tend to believe him when he says we're not planning on shutting you down and throwing
resources
at you.
When you make a big investment in order to right out the gate improve the product so it's more user friendly. That's huge. I mean, that's a big deal. You know, because what's interesting to me is that SimpleNote didn't buy SimpleNote.com before picking the app name. That seems
I don't think they were making. Well, I don't know.
Well, it's just one of those
Okay. So what I do know is that originally it was hosted on AppSpot, which is Google's app engine.
Yeah.
And so it was SimpleNote.AppSpot.com, and then they switched over to an Amazon server, and then somewhere in the middle there, they changed to, it was simple-appspot.com, so they've gone through a couple iterations, and my guess is by the time they were like, hey, we should actually buy the URL, you know, someone already owned it, was squatting on it, and they were like, we want $1 million.
Right.
I don't think they were making any money off of it, so they were like, all right.
Yeah, well, then you can just own that.
Yeah. I mean, they have SimpleNote in the App Store, which is, my guess, is where most people discover them.
Right.
You know? So.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. It's funny, App Development 101, you read any app development book, you take any app development class, they always tell you, when you pick the name of your app, also make sure that it's an open URL, so you can buy the URL before you launch the app. That's that's just, you know, and what they should have done was bought SimpleNote.com and then forward it to SimpleNote.appthing.com, you know, forwarded it to the... But
yeah,
whatever, you know, I say, you know, they're successful. They have a successful app with a huge user base and just got bought for a bunch of money. Who am I to criticize?
Literally, they did something right.
Yeah. I don't like Matt. anyways, kind of cool development over the weekend. Or Friday. So do you remember, so this is sort of a continuation of this long running drama, and it's just more evidence that Steve Jobs is a genius and is always right. You should trust him always.
We did not be biased about these things. I love it.
So the next generation video codec, H.265, has been approved. And that sounds really
fun.
Yeah! Yeah, it's great! Video codecs! And it is actually kind of boring from a technical perspective. But what it's capable of doing is pretty awesome. Basically, H.264, if you remember correctly, was a video format that was really popular because it was something that was supported by HTML5. HTML5 was this new way of coding, or the next step in coding your websites that was just starting to take off when the iPhone kicked off. And obviously the iPhone didn't come with Flash. Flash didn't run videos with the H.264 format, and so there's this big problem of all the videos are in formats that won't run on the iPhone, and if you make them run for the iPhone, they won't run for Flash, and so there's this big hubbub, and then Adobe fixed that like a week later. They're like, okay, we'll make
Flash run.
Yeah, she's like, oh yeah, I guess you could just do that. But it was still pretty controversial because at the time, like, H.264 was owned by a consortium, and even though they weren't charging for it, they could in the future, and even though they promised they never would, there was like no contracts, and so Google didn't want to adopt it. It was just a lot of drama.
Google even started, or they made their own, right? What is it, VP8 or something?
Yeah.
Like that? Which, for some reason, I always think of carrot juice, but...
Exactly. VP6 was what was running prior on for Flash. VP8 was competitive. It had the same quality, but it was, like, quote-unquote open. Well, but Steve Jobs is always right, and so H.264 really took off. Because what they found was that if you did it for H.264, suddenly you could have one format. It worked on the iPhone. It worked on any browser that was based on WebKit, which eventually Chrome was based on, and Firefox. And it ran on, eventually it would run on Android phones, and it ran in Flash. So it was this, like, all-purpose standard, and it worked pretty well. And everybody was happy. Yay!
Yay!
But the problem is that it's old, and new computer science is coming out. Bless you. New technology is developed, and boom. This week, H.265 got approved. Now, why is this a big deal? It's basically just a way of compressing your data so you get like higher quality videos in smaller data packets.
How come it's just one more number? I don't understand.
I think it seems to imply
that this is like the 65th generation of their video upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, they're really slowing down on us.
Seriously, because it's been like 5 years. I don't know. I don't know how the numbering system works. It may be, I don't know, because they did other things. It actually was a really big upgrade. Like it has built-in stuff for single frame. It has a built-in compatibility for single frame shots or pictures, but super high quality pictures. And I actually saw a comparison where it was a bunch of pictures where it was like they took a picture uncompressed, and then they took a picture with all the different formats where they are all the same size file, and then showed you the quality based on the size of the file. And the uncompressed versus the H.265, I couldn't tell the difference, and your JPEG was terrible. I mean, the pixels were like the size of quarters. It was awful. I was just like, it was amazing how the compression rates that they're getting. And so they've done a lot with sound quality and video quality and just doing everything with it. It's a huge upgrade. One of the big reasons why everybody's excited about it is not only is it going to improve data compression, but they're talking about how if you incorporate this process into your 4K TVs, now all of a sudden you don't have to worry about sending data. And it's like, it was like one of those things where because the big question is what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Okay, you got high quality video. What say you upgrade all that high quality video, and you've got your super high quality TV, how are you going to send that data? It's four times as much data. It's going to take a ton of time. And boom, problem solved. It actually will take less time than the old format at 1080p, which is like, whoa, what? Holy cow.
Dude, streaming's the future, man. If you were ever in doubt, this is it right here.
It's true, and it's I find it exciting, and they're talking about how like HD videos for your for Netflix, it's going to be stupid. Why wouldn't you do everything in HD now? Because it's only a little bit more than standard def, and you get super HD. So
here's the thing that really got me in this article too. It was just kind of a subtle thing where they were like, so they just came out with it, but we probably won't start to see any mass adoption until it really gets embedded in the chips and hardware. So it could be 12 to 18 months before it really starts, you know, taking off.
Right.
I'm like, 12 to 18 months? You just made that sound like it was a really long time. Which, do you remember, like, they would be like, so we invented this new technology, and you should start seeing it in somewhere between 5 and 10 years.
Right.
And you're just like, oh,
see,
great.
That's a
way to get my hopes up. Well, I mean, that's the way it used to be.
Right.
And that just shows you the level of acceleration here where they're like, yeah, you're going to have to wait. I mean, it could be a little bit more than a year.
Well, and it'll be a big announcement. Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It'll be a big announcement on the iPhone 57 and the iPad. Well, I guess it'll be the iPad 5 and the iPhone 5S or whatever they call it, where it'll be like, man, we're doing the H.265 format, which is super HD. And the reason why this is important for those of you that don't know, this has to do with hardware acceleration. Basically, what you do is, in order to decompress these, you have to run a really complicated algorithm to take a tiny bit of data and you expand it and it becomes huge, and then the computer runs that huge data. In order to do that quickly, or in order to do that, you can do that with a program where it does it all virtually. And that requires a lot of power, and it takes up cycle time. But if you do hardware acceleration, where you literally hardwire that extrapolation, you can make a tiny little chip that all the data goes into, and then it just expands it for you. All of a sudden, it really lowers the power consumption, and it runs tremendously faster, which is the reason why Apple didn't want Flash in the first place, because Flash was a virtual system of doing that, and H.264 was a hardware hardware way of doing that, and so it was a lot faster and saved battery life, pretty cool. So I'm sure you'll see it coming around with Apple and the next generation, the A6, and Google and Nvidia and everybody else will get on that bandwagon lickety split. So it'll be fun. I'm excited.
Yeah. So in the meantime, before we all get stuck sitting in front of our televisions watching 4K TV,
I know
it's probably not a bad thing to get out and do some walking.
Yeah. Okay?
I don't know why, but this last week or so has just been like pedometer, you know, crazy. I have a friend, he just got a Fitbit little walking thingy.
Yeah,
and, so I've been, you know, paying attention to it. Well, it does the wristwatch. It also clips on and it tracks your sleeping and how many steps you take, like, and how many flights of stairs you go up or, stuff like that. Anyways, so he's been doing it, and I was doing some tracking with my own pedometer, which I actually don't like. It was given to me for free, and
you don't like it, but you've had it for like 5 years.
No. I buy the cheapy, like the $9 ones, and they last a while, and then they break or the battery dies, and then I move on to the next one. This one was given to me, so I was like, oh, cool, a free one, and I've been using it, and I'm just like, I don't trust these numbers at all. So, because I did, they're significantly lower than any other one I've ever used. So then I was tracking it with his, and yeah, come to find out it's like ridiculously lower. So I'm like, okay, great. But not everyone wants to buy a pedometer and wear it on their belt. But there are times when they're like, oh, I'd like to know approximately how many steps I've taken.
Right.
Well, there's an app for that now.
Oh, baby.
It is called Moves. All right, and I'm going to see if I can attempt to share it to you. Just search it in the App Store. Okay. So here's how many steps I've... Yes.
Okay.
Here's how many steps I have taken. I have taken, what is that, 4,729?
Yay.
30? so it does do, uses an accelerometer, so when you're walking, it can feel you walking. Yeah. Oh, you know.
He's sitting there shaking it, for those of you who are listening.
Yeah. So it shows you that, you know, which in itself, you know, you're like, okay, cool. If you're driving, though, it can tell that you're driving. And okay, so what happens is it tells you your steps. And then what it has is, like, you could see I was, like, a total lazy face today. But then it gives you a timeline of your day. So it says that I was in a place and I stayed there for a while, and then I went on a 43-minute walk.
Nice.
And then I've been stationary again. Now, for this 43-minute walk, you can actually click on it, and it will tell you here's where you walked.
Nice. You little map. So does it leave your location services on at all times?
Yes.
Yeah, that would not work for me.
They said, you know, which is like the – here, actually, yesterday was kind of interesting. See, like here yesterday, I went on a – I drove. I transported myself. There I am transporting myself.
Nice.
For 9 minutes, and then I walked around a store for 10 minutes. Then I transported myself for 12 minutes, went somewhere else, and did some walking and running. So anyways, and then it can even, in that place that you're at, it'll tell you on the map, here's where you were.
Nice.
Like a known place. You should know. So anyways, yes, it does use your battery. Yes, I have noticed it. They claim that they try to be very smart about it, and you know, if it notices you're like not moving, it doesn't ping your locations and stuff. You know, which any kind of always on location device, you know, it's going to have some sort of battery impact, which I think, right, you know, is one of the major downfalls. Yeah.
Google, I'm looking at you with Google Maps, okay? I'm sick of your garbage. Turn off. If I'm not using the map, if I'm not currently routing a direction, turn off the location services immediately. Oh, my goodness. They use it as an excuse. You open up the apps, and they're like, cool, now we get to know where you're at. I'm like, no, you're draining my batteries. It drives me crazy.
So I understand that. So I've been trying it. Just for the record, I can still confirm that my free pedometer, well, they're both free, but my physical pedometer is still running a little low. But I hopefully can, you know, figure out what the correction should be. What I need is a third pedometer, and then I can, you know, try to figure out which one's actually right.
You know, when you're actually, it's funny, when you're doing sensors, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to have three all identical all in a row. So if one fails, you can keep the average of the two. If it gets too far out of band, you're supposed to take the value of the middle one. There's actually all sorts of.
I'm sure there is.
I was gonna say,
it's
yeah,
a cool
app. It is cool. So I do have a question though, and you might be the one to ask me. Does the Fitbit take your heart rate?
No.
Okay. Are there any that monitor your heart rate?
Maybe. Not by Fitbit, but I'm sure there's some.
Yeah. Because that to me is like, from what I've learned, the best way to actually figure out like your health is by tracking your heart rate over time. It's like the most accurate way to track how many calories you've burned during a workout, for example, is to track your heart rate over time. Combine that with your height and weight and everything, and it'll okay. So just as surprising to me that there aren't more like heart rate trackers that will connect to your iPhone and will also do a pedometer and stuff. But I don't know, maybe that's crazy complicated. But that's what I'm looking.
It might exist. I don't know.
That's what I'm looking for. If anybody knows, send us a comment somewhere on Twitter, Facebook, or Google Plus, or the website, or Facebook,
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know.
All right.
So there you go. There you go. Silence. Awkward. Do I get to keep going? All right, I'll keep going for a little bit here.
You're up, man.
So, have you tried Twitter's new app? Vine.
I want to. I might download it right now as we're talking.
It's like the age of the standalone apps has arrived. So Twitter bought this company Vine like a while ago, and they have finally released it as their own. Basically, it's a I'm going to call it a video sharing app, but there's a huge ton of caveats behind there. So what did it? You share videos, obviously, and you can share them to Twitter, Facebook, or on your Vine feed itself. Think of it like Instagram in the sense that it's owned by Facebook. You have your Instagram feed, but then you can share it to other social networks. Make sense? So this is that way with video. And what you can do is record 6 seconds of video and share it, or at most 6 seconds. And it's similar to
Snapchat, poke.
Snapchat Poke, in a sense where you literally hold down the button and it'll start recording, and there's like a little bar that fills up, and then if you let go, you can stop, and so then you could record another piece. So it doesn't have to be a continuous 6 seconds. But once you record it, there's no editing, there's no swapping out the parts. So it's kind of like, don't mess up, otherwise that moment's gone. And
Interesting.
so once you do it, you share it, and it shows. And then it'll show up on the website, and like I said, in your feed. And it looks cool. When you start scrolling through, there's it'll play the videos at the right time. And when it's embedded on the website, it will actually default to muting out the video, so it's more like an animated GIF, which web users, will appreciate. But it looks cool. But there's a couple issues with it though. For example, I have not downloaded it, but even if I did, you probably would have trouble finding me
Why?
because you can't find your Facebook friends on it
What?
anymore. Yeah, Facebook cut off access to you to find your friends deal.
Of course. Thanks, Facebook, for playing
Yeah.
nice.
Well, it was funny. They cut it off, and people were just like, "Oh man, Facebook's being a bully," which is like, yeah, that's what it comes off as. And so Facebook had to come out and were like, "Well, no, let's just be a little bit more, clear about what our policy is." The thing is, like, we will allow people to find their friends, but you have to, or we will block it under two circumstances. The first one is if it is not, if you're not like reciprocating your sharing. Like, for example, we'll give you your friends, but you gotta be sharing activity back to Facebook, essentially.
Which is the problem that they had with that Apple Ping didn't want to give any data back to Facebook. Facebook goes, what the heck? Go get rid of yourselves, man.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a bargaining chip. And the other one is if you're a competitor, we're not going to share with you either.
It's reasonable, I
Yeah,
guess. Which, it's hard to argue that Twitter isn't a direct competitor in a lot of ways.
yeah, because apparently, I mean, like sharing on Facebook is kind of like there's a big button to do it. They're not trying to hide it. That's a part of the app. And so Facebook was just like, yeah, we're not going to play nice with them, which is kind of not a surprise given what Instagram was like. Oh, we're not going to play nice with Twitter anymore. We're going to make you click on it like old-fashioned link style.
Neither company right now are playing well with each other. They're on a, well, I would say they're on a crash course. The only thing that they're both doing right now that is okay is that they still allow for the API calls to push stuff from one service to the other. So you can post to Facebook and it'll push it to Twitter, or Twitter and push it to Facebook. And because of that, you can link the two accounts, and then it's okay that they're completely different in a lot of respects, because you can have different networks, but it's it's pretty funny when they're like, no, you can't do this. Gatekeepers are
And I
they're
just
very
I love too how it's like there's no talk, right? It's just like Twitter's like, yeah, we're just going to do this, and we're not going to tell Facebook, and we're just going to release it. And then Facebook's like, we're just going to cut off access. We're not going to tell you. Yeah, so you just get these errors in the app. You're
like, they just wake up one day, and they're like, wait, what? Oh, geez. You know, both sides of them. They're like, yeah, they clearly are – that relationship's got to be fun when they have to talk to each other.
That totally means that, like, Facebook still – they have, like, this – you know, like, this red button somewhere where they're just like, okay, pull up Vine on the list. Yeah, denied. Okay, done.
Right, yeah.
You know, well, it's like a line of code, and that's
it. It's probably, like, they have, like, literally a blacklist where they can put in any IP address, and – once that IP address is on there, you can't access it anymore. Sorry, it's done. And Dunsies. They just put Twitter onto that list. They're like, boom, it's gone. Oh, okay. Right. I guess we can't access that anymore. Never mind. And yeah, which is interesting. I mean, the other part of this, which is, you know, important to remember, is that and it costs Facebook money to some degree to do this because it's like API calls to Google Maps.
Okay.
If you make enough calls, if it's a big enough service, it can actually increase the amount of servers they need, which is a capital investment.
Yeah, so, but we're talking about the Find Your Friends feature.
Well, yeah, but if it's a big enough service, then there needs to be a benefit for them.
Right. Well, I understand. I am just,
you know, if you're a do nothing, do little, you know, website, they're not going to care about you. But I'm just saying that there's actually, it's not just competition. It's Twitter can actually cost them money if it gets big enough.
Yeah, sure, maybe. They're like $1 billion service.
Yeah, well, okay.
Million-person service.
I know, but, you know.
Come on, some new app from Twitter that isn't even branded with Twitter?
I guess
they didn't even notice. They didn't even notice. Not even a blip.
Yeah, probably. Man, oh, jeez. I do like the kind of this advent of this, like, the video, the short video. I think that was something that Snapchat, like, I think that, you know, we were talking about Snapchat a while ago, but that whole idea of the quick video is pretty brilliant. You and I have been doing video text messages back and forth, and I want it to get integrated into iOS. I hope it does at some point. Probably won't be for another 7 years because Apple moves kind of slow on those sort of things. Well, it'd either be like in the next 2 months. It's either like about to happen or it won't happen forever. But I think that
all I want, here's all I want. It's not hard. Let me leave a message with FaceTime. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That would be very, very cool. I actually would, that's all I want. And I think that would be awesome. And because that's exactly what it is. What was I going to say, though? Jeez. What do you feel about – how do you feel – okay, so obviously I am a fan of the standalone app idea. I think that's – I like the fact that Facebook breaks out their pictures and their pokes and their messages and all their different sub-services. They have an app that's outside of the main app. And I'm an outspoken advocate for that. And do you think that there's a point where that gets a little crazy? And what is the point if you do? Or, I don't know, how do you feel about this?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. Because then you, like, look at, like, Google's app, right? Where there's, like, 20 apps embedded in that one app.
Right.
You know, and then they do have individual ones like Mail and YouTube. There's probably some others that I'm forgetting, but those are the ones I have.
Yeah.
And I get why they do it. Clearly the usage has to be higher.
Right.
And it allows them to, you know, they don't have to go through whole code. They can work on improving one part of their service without having to worry about breaking everything else.
Right.
You know, so I get that. I don't know. There's, like you were saying, there does come a point in time where you're like, okay, I have enough app icons. Don't make me make a choice. Right. I kind of like, I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, give it to me. Like, I think we're Facebook you can do photos inside of Facebook, and then they have an individual photo app, which
right.
I'm pretty sure has gone nowhere. And then I think that you can, I don't know if you can poke and do that stuff inside the Facebook app. I doubt it. But you know what I mean? So I guess it'd be cool if you had like a mothership app that had everything. And then yeah. I just watched Independence Day recently. So you have a mothership app that has all the different services in it. And yeah, it's big, I suppose, and getting the UI right is probably tricky. But then you do have all these other apps that kind of, you know, they'll do the one trick, you know, one thing really, really well, and they can iterate on those.
Right.
And then you have a choice, perhaps. I don't know. But I also, you read stories where like the average person downloads 10 apps. And yeah. And you're like, okay, so what does that tell you? Two things, right? Either A, getting them to download an app is going to be super, super hard. So pack everything you can into that one app. Or
right.
B, they have a ton of room on their phone still for apps. So who cares?
Yeah.
You know, if they have two instead of one. So I think developers need to be really, really sensitive to that. And the best thing to do really is to do some testing. And, you know, test your theory. You know, I think if you can, the trick is the app has to run well. And I think, you know, part of the problem is they're, you know, that does get a little bloated perhaps. And they're like, okay, no, right. We don't want to do that. Or the UI just gets super confusing. You got to go through yeah. seven menus just to get to this one feature.
And it's funny. I mean, that's my biggest problem with Google Plus is it does so much that I feel like I don't use it for anything, because I really want, you know, it's like, you know what I would use Google, I would use like crazy if Google Plus had, if Google Plus had the Messenger, bless you, that is tethered to Gmail, if it were in Google Plus, I'd use it all the time. I'd open it all the time. If they would push notifications, if it basically was, if it had, you know, Facebook has the Facebook Messenger app built into Facebook, and then it has the independent Facebook Messenger app. If Google did that with Google Messenger, I would use it all the time, because I actually, that's one of them. That is my primary IM. If I, you know, instant messaging yeah. service, if I need it, and it doesn't exist in any of the apps that I've seen. Maybe I didn't actually realize they had a, this is, I can't, I don't feel like I should admit this, but I didn't realize that they had a Gmail app for the iPhone.
Wasn't very good a while ago.
Oh, wasn't it? Okay. Maybe that's why I didn't care. And the built-in mail app on the iPhone works so well with Gmail that it hasn't been an issue, but maybe that feature's built into the Gmail app, and that's why it doesn't exist in the Google Plus app, although it exists in the Google Plus page and the Gmail page on the website, so why would it exist in both apps? I don't know, but I'll have to look into that.
We can do huddles, by the way, on our phones.
I know, which is very cool. And that's the other thing. It's like you can do all the other messaging formats, you know, all the other communication things that Google does for the website, you can do in one of their apps. But I never, like, where'd the Google messaging go? Come on, guys.
Which, by the way, if I can figure out how to do the on-the-air broadcast via my phone,
yeah,
that'd be amazing, because then we could do this without our computers anymore.
Right, which would be very cool.
For on-the-road things.
Yeah, especially if I were in Cabo in April or something like that.
Exactly.
For example, I'm going to be in Cabo in April.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was not a hypothetical.
Yeah. So, just brace yourself for that.
I got to find someone to... Wait, maybe I don't. Oh, okay.
Maybe not. Oh, okay.
Yeah, dude, you could be talking to me on your phone. I'll do the live, you know, my part from here.
Yeah. It's not going to happen.
If I want to pull you away from... What are you doing there?
Just hanging out for a weekend or, you know, 4 days. Oh. On a little bit of vacation. I'm not going to do the podcast that weekend, I should say. Okay. it was a hypothetical. We could, maybe, but it's, yeah. This is obviously the first time this is coming up between the Furlough Bros, everybody. Yeah. You are in on the news. This is exciting.
Breaking. This is kind of this is dramatic. Do you think that would help us?
Duh, duh, duh. This is part of the soap opera.
Are you going with anybody?
Yes.
Now I'm just...
So, okay, I am going with three other people. One of them is our cousin, Timmy, and then two other people that you don't know that I'm not going to talk about on the show.
That's fine.
But I can tell you later. Sorry, everybody. Okay. You don't get to. They haven't signed up to be part of this show yet.
I gotta find someone to work with then. All right.
I know. Cool. So yeah. Anyways. Yeah. Come on, Google. Get your stuff together. That's the point.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Oh. Do you have anything else to talk about on that?
No, I'm good. Let's talk about DNA.
DNA. So have you heard, did you hear anything about this? This is like, everybody was all getting up in arms because of this story. So have you gotten any introduction to it?
Yes. It's horrible. I have no clue.
Okay. So basically what people are talking about is you can store data on DNA, and it's like a bazillion times better than a hard drive, and it's the future of everything.
That's convenient.
Yeah, well, it's one of the things that drives me nuts about reading articles sometimes and having, like, any clue how these different technologies works is you realize that, like, this is very cool, but it's not nearly as cool as everybody thinks it is. See, it's like the H.265 codec sounded really boring, but was actually really exciting. This one sounds really cool and is not that revolutionary, but it's cool, it's clever, but it's just not useful yet. So this is the deal. Yeah, one of the problems with long-term data storage, or there's two problems with long-term data storage. Number one, the amount of data. There's just a huge amount of data, and any data storage system takes space. Hard drives take space, videotapes take space, CDs take space, everything takes space. So the smaller you can get it, the better. And the other side of this is that it's duration, how long it lasts. RAM, hard drive, like steady-state hard drives require power. So if there's a power interruption, bye-bye data, that's not good. Tape decks degrade. You know, if you keep them in really, really well-contained, stable, you know, environments, they'll last for a couple of decades. CDs don't, you know, same thing, they degrade relatively quickly. So there's just a lot of problems with, like, getting stable information.
Okay.
Well, somebody came up with the idea, is the method for taking information and storing it in a stable way long term that has been developed in the world, and we carry it with us everywhere. It is DNA. All the data, as it were, all the information that you need to build a human being, to build you, is stored in every single cell in your body. It's incredibly small, and if you put it in a dark temperature contained chamber, it's incredibly stable. Both of these things are great because they basically take care of the problem. But now you're asking, how can you turn data into how can you store data on DNA? Well, this is how. So if you don't really know anything about genetic engineering, this is going to be a crash course for you. So basically, genetics, you know, you got your A, C, D, G, what are the four bases of the DNA have four.
I did not do well in biology. I'm just going to put that disclaimer out there.
So I
can't help you. You're on your own. That's what I'm trying to say.
That's cool. So DNA,
A, C, G, T. Does that sound right?
What'd you say it was?
A, C, G, T.
Yeah, Gattaca. G, and they stand for words. But basically, there are four bases, and they both line up. So the double helix, if there's, you know, they line up all along it. But you can pick any one of those four. How they perform genetic engineering is they basically had to figure out how to build genes. So they have these really cool – they had to learn how to read – genes. And what they basically do is they go, we're going to take a gene. We know how the body reproduces genetics. We've studied all the different chemicals. So they put all this chemical, all the different proteins into a little vase with the one strand of DNA that they want. They heat it up, they spin it up, and they basically get it operating until they just produce a ton of these genes that are all identical. And then what they do is they take one protein that just chops it into random lengths. And with the random length, so they now they just have a tremendous amount of this DNA at different lengths. And what they can do at this point, actually it eats it to a certain length. So like all starts at the same. And then they put it into a reader. So at this point, you basically have identical copies of the DNA starting from the first base all the way up to the full length and every step in between, hypothetically. But they're all just sitting there randomly. When what you do is you use a spectrometer, and you it's cool.
I've heard
you
that CSI.
Exactly. You shoot light at it, and when the light reflects off of it, you can, depending on how it reflects, you can tell which of the four bases, the G, the T, the A, or the C, is at that length. And so you know the length, and you know the letter. And so what they do is they start to composite together, in a random sequence, the total length. And eventually, that's what DNA sequencing is. That's how they sequence it. You create a bunch of this identical pieces. You cut it down to random short intervals. If you do enough with it, enough of them, you'll get every single one. You measure each one independently until you have the entire length programmed. Well, that's really cool and all, because now you know what's in the DNA, but if you want to do any genetic engineering, actually you have to build these genes. So they basically built a machine that could do that in reverse, and it could put in data. You could say, I want this sequence of genes, and then we want to build the DNA and build one strand of DNA, and then you can multiply it and grow it. Well, somebody came up with the brilliant, and this is like standard genetic engineering. It's been around for quite a while. Well, some scientists came up with the idea, why not, instead of just saying it's G's and A's and T's and C's, let's say a G is equal to a 00. An A is equal to a 0 or a 1-0. A T is equal to a 0-1, and a C is equal to a 1-1. Or whatever.
I got it. I'm a geneticist.
They're tiny bits of data. And then, so you'll take, let's say you take a song, and it's a bunch of zeros and ones. You break it into a bunch of little pieces. You now have a corresponding sequence of DNA steps. You send that into the machine, it produces a strand of DNA. You can now, this little tiny, smaller than a piece of dust, piece of DNA, is stable, it's storable. You send it over to the other side of the lab who reads DNA. They do all their special stuff to read it. They go, okay, now we have the DNA sequence, and we know that G is equal to 00, A is equal to, and they go through, and then they have an algorithm that expands it into DNA. And now they can take that data file, and whether it's a picture or a sound file or whatever, they can run that and like it were computer code, which is very cool. The problem with all of this, it's extremely slow. It takes days to do. So basically what they've done is they've figured out have a giant archive of information that's very stable, you are very rarely going to need to read from it, and you're very rarely going to need to change it, write to it. This is a great long-term storage solution.
Great's quite the word I would use to describe this.
What's very cool about it, though, actually, is because this uses...
You'd have a whole new level of espionage, really.
Yes.
You know, eventually it's like, I got the code in my body. It's flowing through my veins.
Actually, and there's some discussion about that. What happens if you could, like, put actual DNA into an egg or a sperm and then have that become part of the genetic code? Oh, man. Like, you now are embedding data into humans, which is kind of exciting.
That's weird. You literally would be like, it's like Neo. Really, from the Matrix.
Right, exactly.
You become the one. Yeah, your DNA, you're the key.
Gregor Mendel would have something to say about it, whether or not it makes it to the... Actually, I guess you just have to put it on both strands so you know that when it splits, you got 100% chance of it making it to the next. But the point in all of this is, that it's a minor step. And they basically took something that totally makes sense. It uses really foundational technology, and now you just have to find like a use case for it. What I could definitely see them doing, though, I could definitely see it becoming this idea for, like, you know, every once in a while, because we're humans and we like the idea of time capsules, we throw time capsules out there, like we throw like satellites into space with images engraved on silicon disks that like explain our number system and then like extrapolate into physics. Yeah. And then it, like, and how units work. And then they show pictures.
We spend money and resources on that?
Oh yeah, because and what's great about it is we don't even just throw it out into space.
I love our
scientists. It just circles around Earth, because if we go extinct or, you know, we devastate ourselves, we want future humans who don't remember us to go out into space and go, what the heck is this? Holy cow. This is a, you know, and actually binary is a big part of it, because it's theoretically it's a basic understanding of how the universe works. And so aliens could read it, or future humans. It's more universal. What's cool about this is that,
don't tell me these things, man. That's just that's okay, cool.
It's such a small part of our budget. it is literally a drop in the bucket.
I want to know, whose job is that to be like, you know what we need? Just in case we go extinct, we need a record, and we need it to be in space.
Well, you know, I want that job. it sounds kind of cool.
And then who's the person who goes, you know, that's a good point.
Dude, that's how NASA is, dude. They're all dreamers like that.
Let me run some numbers real quick, and let's just see.
Somebody once said, you know what we should do? We should explode ourselves to the moon. And people said, that is a good idea. Those are the people.
No. It was someone who goes, it'd be cool to go to the moon someday. And then someone came along and went, you know, I have a way that I think could work. Might be dangerous, not proven, but it would be fun to watch at the very least.
I was just saying, it might be dangerous. So.
You know, and he proposes this idea, right? Here's an idea. Let's have an explosion. We'll try to control it, you know, directionally, and the thrust will take us up. And have, again, that other person on the other side who goes, yeah, okay, I can buy that.
Here's
$1 million. Let's see what you can do.
Yeah, then eventually you had a president who said, you know, we choose to do these things and the other things as well, not because they're easy, but because they are hard. I don't know, why do we do this sort of stuff? Why do we do this sort of stuff? It's crazy sometimes.
It's almost like, you know what? We could store some information on DNA.
You know what it is?
You get the feeling like he had to watch Jurassic Park with his kids that weekend and came back to work and was like, data DNA. I get it. It's amazing.
I can totally do this. Well, what'll be interesting is, I think what we'll do is we'll put all of this DNA together. We are definitely going to make these, like, we already have DNA storage systems. We're like out in the middle of Siberia, where like we have these big like facilities that are basically the Noah Ark of, you know, of current technology, where we take DNA and we store them in cold storage so that they're super stable for eons, hopefully.
Wait, we already have this?
We already stored DNA of all the animals and plants and everything. Well, what happens if we nuke ourselves into oblivion? How are we going to recreate the universe? I mean, this is important stuff.
Totally.
But now we'll put all of our data there as well, which is fascinating, because it's like, it's the same technology. It's, you know, future humans or aliens that came, all they'd have to do is figure out, this is the building blocks of their life. And then they'll accidentally create these, like, you know, these, this is not a cell. When you put this DNA in a cell, nothing happens. It just degrades. What the heck is this stuff? And somebody will go, I don't know, maybe it's box 19th sonnet or whatever. I don't think that's a thing. a sonnet and Bach. I don't think he wrote sonnets.
Thank you, studying Shakespeare.
Yeah, I was.
That was the article.
Bill Shakespeare.
They'll go, wow, I'm really glad that we discovered this, because that really enlightens us on this.
You know what it is?
On the society that to kill themselves.
We're totally hoping that that's what we find somewhere else. And so we're like, we got people that are going, this is what, because what it is it's people asking, if we find another alien species, like, how will we figure out, let's say we find an extinct alien species, what will we have to do to understand what they do? And so they basically decrypt, like, they tried to boil a math system down to the basic system. And once they figured it out, it was like, why don't we do this for aliens as well? And everybody's like, because it's a waste of money. Like, yeah, but, you know.
Yeah, but if you bought into that part of it already, right? If you've already thought that through right. for aliens, yeah. you know, you're
yeah,
like.
Yeah, they're looking for aliens. These guys are, you know.
Reciprocity here.
Honest personal opinion is I say we waste that quote. I think it's worth it, but it's difficult mostly because it makes me feel good. I don't know if there's a hardcore logical explanation to it, except that, you know, except the XKCD quote of, you know, I imagine that the universe is full of the remains of societies who made the logical, intelligent decision to not explore the universe, just to be found by the societies that made the illogical decision. You know, you're like, oh yeah, stars, it's so exciting.
Cool. Need to speak truth into our lives.
Oh man, so often that guy. but yeah, I don't know, it's fascinating. So
there was some 15 minutes talking about DNA.
Yeah, especially as impressive. I started out this conversation with, it's not actually that cool.
It is cool.
It's just not.
It's just have an impact on our lives today.
Exactly, and probably never will. So that's exciting, and because it's just something different. But everybody's, you know. Anyways, so this week there was some good old fashioned drama. You know me, I like drama.
You are attracted to dramas.
It's true. Big question. Who's to blame for Windows 8? And what do I mean by that? I mean, Windows 8 sold really poorly, and everybody's like bickering amongst themselves in the Windows 8 community.
So I don't know if this is if this will play a role, but just a friendly reminder, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions during this part. Especially yes. that we're breaking the show up into pieces.
Yeah. Hey, you know, that is a good place to break this one in, because HP is, you know, one of the sellers of Windows 8. But Ballmer, so an interesting thing happened. Well, it's not actually that interesting. It's a total Microsoft move. Basically, Surface is this new piece of hardware that Microsoft's selling. This is right. their first real foray into computer hardware.
They just released the Surface Pro this week, too.
Exactly. And so
$899. Unless you want a keyboard, then it's a little more.
Yeah, seriously. Which, who doesn't want a keyboard? So the big thing was, you know, the big question was, so the Windows, how many Surfaces did you sell? Everybody wanted to know. And Windows said, we don't really keep track of that sort of thing. We just keep track of how many Windows operating systems we sold. So it's a subcategory. It's inside of that, but that's what they're telling everybody. They're telling everybody that they don't keep track of it. Now, basically, their way of saying
it is potentially possible, maybe, that they just don't they're tracking it and they didn't have a good enough or a reliable answer yet. You know, just it didn't. You know, the data wasn't coming in.
They're only selling them through Microsoft retailers.
Okay, they know the answer.
Yes, they know the number minus the number of returns. They know exactly how many they've sold.
They know the number minus the ones sitting in inventory minus the ones currently being shipped.
Exactly.
They know it to the
And the thing is with all of this is it's like it's what they're basically saying is we sold so few that it would be hugely embarrassing if we broke out our Windows Surface sales, which by the way, who called this back in August or October whenever this launched? It was the week that Microsoft launches the Windows 8 tablets, Apple announces the iPad mini, and guess who sold an unbelievable number of iPad minis, and guess who didn't sell any Surfaces? Oh my goodness, I love Apple, how they mess with their competition, you know. It was just a boom slap Microsoft. So Microsoft didn't sell very many Surfaces, which for really, honestly, anybody who played with the Surface knows exactly why. The computer doesn't work very well. But that didn't stop them from not selling very many Windows 8 licenses at all. So, and consider the fact that you could get a full legal version of Windows 8 for like $10 that first like month that it was launching, and nobody bought it. Nobody bought the upgrades. Right, and no. Well, you couldn't buy a full version. You could buy an upgrade for like super cheap. Nobody bought the upgrades. You could buy new computers.
Did they share those numbers? I mean,
it was part of that. Maybe.
It says they sold 60 million Windows 8 licenses.
Right. Which is a ton, but remember what we've always said about this. It's not that Microsoft isn't going to sell a ton of Windows 8. It's that they're going to be way underselling. It's not the number of – it's not the total number that's the problem. It's the fact that they're not growing anymore. People are not – you know, the only people that are buying it are people that have to. People that have to upgrade because they've held on to the same computer for the last 5 years. And it's now they don't have a choice, and so they have to upgrade to Windows 8 because Windows 7 doesn't exist anymore. So Microsoft didn't get very excited about all of this news, and Steve Ballmer went about trying to explain what happened, and basically his explanation was all of their partners basically sold lame computers. Windows 8 isn't the problem. It's the hardware running Windows 8. If our OEM partners like Lenovo and HP and Dell, if they had actually put out some decent hardware at decent prices, this wouldn't be a problem. It's not the fact that we have two very different UIs, one of which is very confusing and doesn't work with a pointer and keyboard, and the other, which only works with the pointer and keyboard. That wasn't the problem.
And it's also not a problem that we're selling a piece of hardware, and then our commercial is telling everyone how amazing we are and how horrible our competitors are.
Right. That has nothing to do with it. Which point the OEMs like snap back, like, whoa, how about you slow your roll, Stevie Ballmer, and you know, chill out a bit. This isn't our fault.
I think you sit there and you're just like, our hardware hasn't changed. Your operating system has changed. Help me out here.
We upped our game in specs, and you know, one of the big things, like Vista, the biggest thing that I actually disagree with this statement. But the argument with Vista, and the reason why it failed so miserably, I agree that it was part of the problem, but it wasn't the only problem. What they think happened was it was really an operating system designed for a minimum of 1 gig of RAM, but really it needed 2. They designed an operating system that wasn't designed for the current model or the current specs that were being sold. Everybody was selling 512. The high ends were 1 gig. Of RAM and 512 megabytes of RAM, and because of that, the operating system didn't really work very well. And because the operating system didn't work very well, nobody wanted to buy it.
Yeah.
Which is reasonable. I think that there were also stability issues, and actually there were huge stability issues, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that drivers for things like the sound card and the graphics cards, companies like NVIDIA gets a lot of blame for this one. They wrote really bad drivers early on that would like just tank the operating system all the time. That didn't get updated, and there were different. So it was just one of those things where it was like it was a combination of problems. That, and really on top of it all, it was a new operating system, and people tend to shy away from new user interfaces. And then they got rid of, like, there were things that they did with that operating system that drove me crazy. And the sum total was it was very uninteresting to the general user base for about a year until the hardware and the drivers had really caught up with the operating system. And the operating system had gone through a few service packs, and so some of the early problems that people didn't like from the UI stuff, and people were getting used to it. So there was just a mindshare thing. Yeah. And then all of a sudden they launched Windows 7, or they announced Windows 7, and people were like, well, look forward to that. And the thing with Windows 7 that they did really well was they basically designed it for the hardware that was out there, and it was stable, and it works really well. And so they threw out all this, like, they tried to do that again with Windows 8, and I think to a large degree that they succeeded. The hardware that's out there can run Windows 8, with the exception of all the touch panel stuff.
There we go.
That was a huge new thing. And really and truly, like, there should be no computers that are being sold in Fry's or anywhere, you know, or Best Buy or...
That's everybody I've heard, they're like, buying a desktop with Windows 8, they go, that's a joke. Oh,
right,
horrible.
That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense to do it, and that's the big problem. Is they basically, you know, they killed a huge segment of their, exactly, and you know, the touch screen on the laptops, it just doesn't, and so it was this weird, everybody's kind of to blame. Windows made an operating system that wasn't designed for the current hardware, and the OEMs do what they always do, which is ignore the problem until it's way too late to fix it, and it affects everybody. And really and truly, the only company that came out with a piece of hardware that was designed for the software was Microsoft. And guess what? It's stupid expensive. And that's
right.
The problem.
Yeah. Well, and just for the record, in HP's defense, it was going through a little bit of management change.
Yeah, you guys are finding yourself. Who can blame
you? Slightly distracted. So the hope is that that's not the case.
All the HP engineers that are working on the new computers were distracted by the management change. That was mean.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
I think that's a legitimate yes.
Okay.
Because at one point in time they were talking about spinning off the entire.
That is actually a very good point. That could really distract you from, you know, doing a good job. It's one of those.
Anyways, I don't know what's up with Lenovo, and Dell has their own set of issues.
Yeah. You mean their whole set of issues where they don't sell anything anymore?
Yeah, you know, they're trying to go, not be public anymore and get bought out because they're having trouble making money. Yeah, you know, some of those issues.
Those issues. Yeah,
you know,
the whole thing. You don't make any money anymore. That's sort of the bottom line issue, isn't it? So I don't know. I don't know.
I hate Dell.
Oh, honestly though, they are a joke.
They don't need my help.
Yeah. They're
doing just fine on their own.
Yeah. Nice job, Michael Dell. Went from, you know, hugely anyways.
Not living up, and so the fingers have started pointing, huh?
Yeah, which is
that
awesome.
Was a good sign.
Well, I love it, but I don't think the Steve Ballmers of the world love it that much. Specifically, you know what the worst part about Steve Ballmer is? He's stealing my basketball team. That jerk. Dang it. I was a Sacramento Kings fan. I went to the University of the Pacific in Stockton, California. They were like our closest sports team. And I didn't actually care that much, but all my friends cared. And so I started to care eventually.
I
became like a Kings fan. I was like, yeah, Kings. And it just got announced that that Seattle is companies in Seattle, including Sacramento or including Microsoft,
right.
Steve Ballmer, are investing in the Kings, and they're going to turn him into the Seattle Sonics again and Supersonics.
So Seattle's getting a team.
Yeah, super lame.
Lame. What about the Mariners?
Mariners is basketball.
Basketball.
Yeah.
No. Okay. There's a team in Portland.
Portland is a different state.
I know. I'm trying to think who they probably hate it too, because they were pulling in all the Washington fans. Just like just like Seattle was getting all the baseball fans.
Exactly. And they, and well, and the worst part about this is that the Seattleites have been whining and complaining about getting their team stolen for the last couple of years because Oklahoma City took the Supersonics. And guess what they're going to do? They're going to steal the Sacramento Kings. Drives me crazy.
All fair and loving basketball.
Gosh, I know, seriously. It's annoying. Whatever. At least the Golden State Warriors are, like, kicking butt this year. Dude,
are
this
they? Been,
oh, yeah, dude, they're kicking butt.
That's unheard of.
I know. It's really random. They're, like, one of the best teams in the league right now. The Lakers beat them, but only by, like, 2 points, which is crazy. And it was basically LeBron. It was basically Kobe Bryant going, I can't be beat by the Golden State Warriors. I can't let it happen.
I have a personal vendetta against a goal of mine.
I can't let so it didn't happen, but they got dang close. It's been a good year for Bay Area sports, which I realize most of our audience doesn't care about that at all. So
all I care about is one more game.
One more game. Let's go Niners. Let's go Niners. Jim Harbaugh. Anyways.
So in the meantime, let's continue the California Love Fest and talk about one of those companies.
Cupertino. Oh man, this is it. So I don't know if y'all have been
you're such a fanboy, I love it.
I know. Have been
says
following
the guy with that says the guy on the iMac with his iPhone right next to him.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like I'm the one who had to like try every different phone before I find. So, okay, cool. We're back. Not worried about it. Cool. Perfect. So, 49ers. Anyways, Cupertino, what were we talking about? Apple.
Oh, yeah.
So this week was a weird week for Apple. Basically, they announced one of their most profitable quarters ever. And then let's start here. Their stock took a giant dump. And then they announced one of their most profitable quarters ever, and then their stock took another plunge. And we don't talk about stocks very much here. We talk about sports more than we talk about stocks, which is curious because
– That's the way it should be.
Yeah, as you say, because stocks actually have to do with tech companies. But
I was reading about a podcast that they were saying that they used to talk about like software development.
Yeah.
And then they had this realization that they said, no, we want to be a podcast that software developers would like to listen to, not a software development podcast. Does that make sense? So
yes.
Podcast for software developers. And so then that actually freed them up to talk about more than just software development, because they figured if they were into a topic, other software developers would be into it.
Which is actually the reason why we talk about – I mean, that's – it's funny. This is a little bit inside baseball, but it's the reason why we talk about this stuff is because we realize that hopefully part of what you find entertaining is more than just what we talk about, but our relationship, which these are the sort of things we talk about. We just keep a little more focused on the show than normally. But anyways, one of the big reasons that we don't talk about stocks on this show is because the stock market is stupid. Because stocks almost never have anything to do with the performance of a company. And that's actually the reason why we don't talk about stocks, because stocks have about as much to do with of what technology a company is developing as the sports teams that they're buying. They're like literally that closely related, but the media really trumps it up as Apple stock price is dropping. That must mean that their future is like, you know, terrible. Like they try to jimmy up these like explanations. And the reason why they do that is because by coming up with these explanations and adding to a general zeitgeist, a general thought, a general narrative, they can drive the stock different places. And if you follow how the markets work at all, short sales, short stocks, if you invest in short stocks, you make money when the stock falls. And if you buy long, that's basically you're buying stock that will make you money when it goes up, which is, you know, your more traditional type of investing. It's actually not even, though. Long investing is, like, not necessarily traditional. There's, like, buying and selling stock because you believe in a company and you want to have influence over it, which is what
big investors do.
Well, I was going to use Big investors don't, though. That's the thing. Big investors buy mutual funds, or they get into hedge funds. What individual people? Okay,
it is so clear that you have stepped outside of your realm of expertise right now. Well, which is why we don't talk about stocks.
That's another reason. But okay, wait a second. Let me start here. Huge investors that can buy like 10% of a company. They buy single stocks because they want to help control a company. Steve Jobs traded 10% of Disney stock because he wanted to help control and direct Disney. That was part of what that deal was. When you get into like your individual, like, but most of, and especially Apple is a real classic example of this, where most of the traders that are most of the direction that Apple stock is going it's not being driven by people that are buying and holding on to a stock because the company's doing well to, you know, help control the future of the stock. Most of it's being controlled by either your mutual fund investors who are buying a lot of different stocks, or your index stock investors, or they're being controlled by your hedge fund managers, which do a lot of the short and long selling, trying to play the market. And what basically is going on is Apple, for a mutual fund investor, if you own a million shares of Apple or whatever, or 100,000, let's throw that number out there. You own 100,000 shares of Apple. If it goes up a few dollars, that's great news. It goes down a few dollars, that's terrible news. But one of the big ways that they get their bonuses is through dividends, where basically you get paid X number of dollars per stock that you own. And the dividends are not usually huge. They're usually a couple bucks per stock, $1, $2, $3. Now, if you own 10 shares, that's so 30 it's bucks.
Between, oftentimes, they're around 3%.
Right. Yes. Okay. And the reason why I say $1, $2, $3 is because Apple did its first dividend in forever, and it was like a buck and a half per share. And so if you own 10 stocks, you're an individual owner, it doesn't really make a lot. It doesn't do that big of a thing for you. But if you're a mutual fund investor and you got $100,000, that's $100,000 payday. That's a huge amount of money. That's cash in your pocket. That's not stock price increases. And so they tend to buoy a stock based on who grows consistently, who has dividends. Whereas the long sellers and the short sellers that are really going for the quick ups and downs of a stock, the hedge fund managers, they're really big into tracking what the stock's going to do tomorrow, the next day, the next week, and the next month. And they don't really care beyond that. And so they're really into like driving the stock up and down, up and down, up and down, getting all crazy with it. Well, mutual fund holders are really into dividends, and they buoy a stock.
I don't know if I would say that.
But. Well, okay. I understand what you're saying.
Well, that they're only a small subset of mutual funds are actually dividend-paying stocks. Most of them are growth stocks.
You're right. Okay.
Go ahead and just jump to the conclusion, I think.
So, yeah, okay.
Because I feel like I'm getting lost / bored.
All right. Fair enough. Basically what's going on here is Apple is not doing one of the traditional things that of growth stocks, which is growing consistently and paying dividends. The two things that mutual funds really like, which if you've got a ton of mutual funds that are all buying your stock, and so a huge amount of your stock is owned by mutual funds, then you're very consistent because mutual funds move slow, whereas the hedge funds move fast. And so what you're seeing is Apple stock just jerk around all over the place, skyrocket it for a year, and then just plunge for a year, which is relatively quickly. And that has a lot to do with the fact that they're mostly controlled by hedge funds, because the hedge funds, they get into the business of quite illegally sometimes spreading disinformation, talking about how setting expectations super high so that Apple misses their expectations, or setting expectations of the stock is going to crash, it's going to be terrible because, you know, they totally blew this deal and they're not going to sell any iPhones. And so a lot of Apple's, like, a lot of the rumors and stuff around Apple has everything to do with controlling their stock price. It has nothing to do with the with the technology that they're developing, or their sales, or the people that are working for them. Is basically what I'm getting at. There's no correlation there. So Apple had this like killer quarter. They sold an unbelievable number of phones, and iPads and iPad minis. And you'll if you like really get into it, you know, there are some general trends, like the iPad didn't sell quite as many as they wanted to, but the iPad mini sold like crazy. The iPhone 4 is dominating in America, but is selling really poorly in China, which is something that we talked about a couple weeks ago. That shouldn't be shocking news, because Android is selling like crazy in China, as long as completely stripped of anything that would make it profitable for Google, like Google Search or Gmail. All those things aren't there. So no American companies are making money in China right now, except Microsoft with the Lumias. Because they're selling decently well, they don't need to sell money to have it. They don't need to sell many to have it be a big deal for them, and they're still making money off of it. To say all this, I think what you're going to like expect this to happen. Apple's going to start paying huge dividends and doing stock buybacks in the next year. I think that's going to change, because there's just this general trend of the fact that it's like, you know, that Jim Cramer's been really like pounding the drum on this. And basically Jim Cramer was like, this is what happened. Steve Jobs got away with being a jerk to his investors forever, because he's Steve Jobs. Tim Cook is doing exactly what Steve Jobs did, except that he's not Steve Jobs, so it's not cool anymore. So how about you stop that? I mean, and the example that they give is that right now they have like $137 billion in liquid assets, and their market cap, how much their company is worth if you take the number of stocks times the dollars that they're worth, there it was like 400 and something billion. So literally, if they were just to buy a bunch of stock, they could like raise their stock price by an extra quarter, because it's worth a quarter the liquid money, the actual dollar bills that they have. So it's unbelievable how much money they have. They're totally out of whack. They have no stated plans for it. It's like, what the heck would you do with that much money as a company anyways? Like, buy Microsoft? Like, honestly, what are you guys doing? And it's just one of those like crazy things where there's no reason for a company to have that much money. And it was exciting when they had $60 billion, because you could almost, because they could make a crazy purchase, like buying Nokia at that point in cash assets. And it was really exciting, because maybe there was a plan. And now it's become obvious that there is no plan. They just want a lot of money.
I don't even know if you'd say they want a lot of money. I just think they don't know what to do. That is not clearly that is not a strong competency at whoever their CFO is right now.
Right. Oppenheimer.
Yeah, he just doesn't appear to have, the skills to handle that kind of situation. I mean, it's a great one to be in, where you're just like, yeah, we make a bazillion dollars. It's amazing. But it's just not the best handling of the cash that you would like to see.
Right. Right. And I guess, and so. All of this to get into, I think it's interesting to complain about the stock market. I like to, because I like to complain about the stock market.
It's gambling if you buy single stocks.
Pretty easy, much
done. And Apple is a perfect proof case of that.
Right, because you're fighting giant investors that are trying to mess with the stock all over the place. But what's interesting in all of this is that there was, I think, a very telling thing that came out in this quarterly earning. And I'm coupling that with a rumor that seemed to have gotten a little bit of play.
Which I hope is true.
Yeah. So there was a lot of talk over the last few weeks about next generation iPhones. And when I say there's a lot of talk in the last couple of weeks, there's always a lot of talks. If you pay any attention, everybody's always got rumors. But one of the two consistent rumors, or the three consistent rumors, out there are about the next generation of the iPhone, which is this, and they basically say there won't be a refresh until next September or October, which should have been listening to us. We've been saying that forever. Obviously, that's the case. But the big thing is that they're talking about the fact that there's going to be three new iPhones. There'll be the iPhone 5S, which will be basically the iPhone 5, but, you know, a small bump in performance like every
like S
version. Yeah. Cool. That's awesome.
Hey, I own an S version. Love it.
Yeah, exactly. And I own the iPhone 5, and I'll probably be jealous that I'll have an S. I'll get white out, and I'll, like, put it on there, so it's cool.
Like, man, I want the H.265.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. Why did you say that? So now that's going to be bothering me until it launches, and it's just going to be, by that point, the fever to get that quite great.
You're
now
welcome.
Thanks. I hadn't even crossed my mind that, yeah, that's right. I will be missing out on that for the next 2 year and a half. Fantastic. Stupid phone. Why did I buy this?
yeah, you should have just waited till the next generation. I mean, that's the solution to all
exactly.
of this.
Exactly. But the other two rumors were the iPhone Math, which everybody was like, "What the heck is an iPhone Math?" And then it turns out that the code name was iPhone Plus. And that just got translated as iPhone Math. I think it's kind of funny.
Dude, we should start calling this, it's a Google Math Hangout.
Oh my gosh.
Google Math.
That's totally going to be what it is. I'm down for that. And, but basically that's going to be like, that is a test model for like a 4.65 inch iPhone screen.
Oh,
it's basically
a
big screen iPhone. Yeah, exactly. And, a phablet. I like that. And,
P.S. I'm making a bet because HP said that it's going to have to get back into the you know, the phone space and probably the tablet space.
Yeah.
And in their and one of the things that Meg Whitman was saying in
Meg Whitman
in one of her speeches was that you know, there's people are it's annoying to have to carry around a phone and a tablet and a computer, right? They're like, it's just, we have all this stuff. Ooh. There was consolidation, and now we're building it back out again. She's like, and people are looking for consolidation, and which eventually led to these convertibles,
right,
which is, you know, those tablet, laptop things where instead of it just rotating and going down, you actually can pull off the screen and it becomes a tablet.
Right. Okay. I see what
she was talking about that. Yeah. So there's zero insider information here whatsoever. I'm in a completely different division. I'm just listening to the thought. You know, I'm just going to the next logical conclusion here.
Yes.
I'm willing to bet that HP gets into the phablet space, which is such a stupid word.
That is really stupid. Whatever. Did you hear that somewhere else, or did you make that up? Because
I heard it somewhere else.
Oh, dang it.
Yeah, it's the right in between the phone and tablet.
And the tablet, yeah.
It's the phablet.
Well, it's like the Galaxy S2, or not the Galaxy S2, but the Galaxy Note 2.
Yeah, no, and that's what they call that. That's the example. That's the poster child of it. So I could see HP get into that. I don't even know how big it is. Like, what is it? 6 inches? 5.5
Yeah, it's
inches?
Huge. It's,
I
mean, like, some, yeah, it's gigantic.
It's ridiculous.
It is actually ridiculous. And it's too small to be a tablet. It's too big to be a phone. I'm sorry. You know who buys that? It's people who, okay, this is going to sound awful, but people who buy that are people who can't afford the tablet, the unsubsidized tablet, but want a tablet and can't justify just having the phone. They need the tablet, but they need the subsidy of the phone. That's
hey,
who buys it.
And, all I'm saying, and I'm well, telling you, what I'm saying is that they're going to come out and say,
met, yeah,
it could be, I mean, which is Samsung's whole thing. They're like, it's a smartphone for business people because their whole, the commercial on Hulu is you can be watching like a sales presentation and be taking notes at the same time because you can run two apps at the same time.
Yeah, that functionality works awfully. Awfully.
Okay, well, whatever. My point being, I could see HP get into that space as a form of a convertible. They don't do tablets, they don't do phones, they still do PCs, don't even do PCs, but they do,
it's going to run WebOS.
These complets and phablets. I don't know what you call these.
Complets.
These tables?
Like, tables, yeah, really.
Or what do they know? They'd be tutors? Anyways, whatever.
Maybe they'll finally take the built-in Pico projector mainstream.
Oh, yeah. That would be cool. But anyways, total side note. That could be what the and then there could be it'd be the HP math, basically.
Yeah, the HP math. I like.
And they would actually like spell it out just to be counterculture.
Right. They totally would.
No. It would have to be the. They has to have the word smart in it. That's what
I was going to say. It'd be the.
And then a whole bunch of numbers.
It'd be the smartphone smart.
Yeah. It'd be the smartphone 265 plus H11Z.
Right.
The Z would stand for wireless.
So I appreciate this rumor. But I do not want to forget.
I was just hoping to start some controversy. That's all.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. But this is all you did cut me off right before I got to the one rumor that I actually think is true. Because I think the iPhone Plus, the bigger iPhone, your phablet, as it were, they've built them. They're not going to mass produce them, at least not for a while. What I actually do think is going on is that they're talking about the iPhone plastic is what it's been nicknamed.
The iPhone plastic. It's or the 3G.
Yeah, yeah. It's basically a cheap iPhone, and it's a cheap modern iPhone. Now, I don't know what they're going to do to make it cheap, but it's going to be super cheap. Now, I don't know why it might be just a 3GS with a modernized modernized chip in it. I don't know, but the idea is right now and is that they need to, you know, they need to, we've been talking about this forever. They need to sell a cheap iPhone for India and China. And we've been saying that and saying that and saying that, and it's never come true. It's always been the argument for why they need to do it. And the reason why I feel like this for the first time has any validity is actually because Apple has been watching what's been going on with sales in China for the last last 3 months. They saw what happened in the last quarter, and this is the first time that everybody sees the obvious evidence that sales of smartphones is skyrocketing in China, especially China Mobile, and they're not buying iPhones, or they were up until this point. They were buying iPhones at the expected rate as the number of smartphones increased, but the number of smartphones skyrocketed and the number of iPhones sold didn't. And the problem is that they're too expensive. If they buy them subsidized, the subsidized price point is right. Nobody wants to buy them subsidized. They want to buy them outright and then hook up with like China Mobile later. And the problem is that people can't or won't afford the $800 iPhone, especially when there is a Android version that they can't afford that the government approves of that they can easily get from any store. And so for the first time, Apple is actually losing out on sales. And so this is the change that I think is going to happen. I think Apple's going to come out with an iPhone plastic that for some crazy technological reason doesn't work with American networks. Sorry, can't bring it to America. You guys don't get the cheap iPhone, which is going to make everybody livid. But it's going to be pretty funny because they're just going to say, well, just get the iPhone 4S because that's now free now that we have the 5, the 5S, and the iPhone 4S, which is a compelling argument on Apple's
behalf. Well, it's free on contract. But
right. Right, exactly. And I think basically what you're going to see, I think for the first time, it's like, I think Apple's been watching this. They keep having these different models of cheap iPhones that they produce. How Probably. Can we get the cost down and yet still have them, you know, deliver the same performance as the higher quality iPhones? You know, what are the different things that we can hedge on? What are the different, you know, features that we can get rid of to justify this system and yet still have it perform?
Right.
And I think every year they update the iPhone plastic or the cheap iPhone. And it's finally to the point where from a very real marketing perspective or, you know, market perspective and market share perspective, they're just not making any money in the future of where people will buy phones. There are more users on China Mobile than there are Americans. 2 to 1. There are 800 million, 800 to 700 million China Mobile users.
That's
there's
a lot.
Like 350 million Americans. They're literally are, I mean, it's insane, and they're not selling any because China Mobile doesn't want to sell them because they don't think they can, which is a really, really good reason to change your strategy, because that's an unbelievable amount of money that you're passing on, in order to sell these. And so what's crazy is it's like they killed it this year in America. They did great. And so for your Western, you know, solidly first world countries, yeah.
You just see, they don't think about it that way.
Exactly. That's the problem.
They think about it in terms of, you know, what's cool technology that we can make that will help people and be accessible to people.
Right.
And so the language that they will use and that I would use if I were them would be to say, here is this group of people, a very large group of people who we have not been able to help. We have not made technology accessible to them. How can we help these people make their lives better?
Right.
Yes, it may mean that we can't use the absolute latest and greatest because they're just not there right now.
Right.
And, you know, just like I like to think that, you know, when they were first making the Mac, I'm sure that they had a dream for, you know, say color screens and stuff and, you know, and having retina displays, but the technology was just not in a place where they could pull that off. Right.
Right.
Even remotely near a price point that they wanted to hit. And, you know, and the problem is now that they can, but they still can't do it at the price point they want.
Right.
And they almost need to step back and say, okay, let's make it accessible to these people. And, you know, let's see if we can help them and tap into this market and, yeah, it'll grow and sales will be awesome. And hopefully we can figure out a way to keep our margins where they are, which enables us to do this amazing research and, you know, make these great products. But yeah, it's an interesting place that they're in.
Yep.
I don't think they care about, honestly, I don't think they care about the sales. That to them is just a metric of how well they're helping people.
Right. And I do think they care about profit margins though. And that's, you know, and
yes.
Or I should say not profit margins, but profits. And you know, that's a tremendous number of people who, in order to make any profits off of them, you have to change your profit margins and you have to change your gross price. And that's
well,
and that's what the game is.
When Dave and when the Packard guys, you know, when Dave and Bill started HP, I saw one of the videos on them, and they were like, our profit basically is a measurement of the value that we are providing customers.
Right.
That's what it is. So when we have a higher profit, it means that we are providing higher value to our customers. Because that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And it enables us to go look for other ways to add value to their lives. And
right.
Yeah, I think it's, you know. But anyways, I mean, HP was, you know, they were the beginning of all these companies lot of altruistic ways of thinking.
So when HP sells printers at a negative profit, what does that mean?
I will not deny that HP definitely thinks differently about those things.
Today.
It's not nearly, it is not nearly as altruistic as it was when it first got started. And who knows, that could have just been a video and it was never actually that way.
Right,
that was definitely a market share grab, a market share play.
Right.
Definitely.
Well, and their printers might have negative value added, but their ink cartridges have a tremendous amount
of value
added.
Well, and the trick is to look at the system cost, right? Not just the hardware, but also the ink and toner. And
yeah, I mean, it's
what we're saying. And HP, you know, they did that for market share reasons because they've, you know, followed people's shopping habits and you know, when they look at prices.
Right, no. I think from a business perspective, it was obviously the best thing to do. It's the most profitable ink. You know, or printing division of any company in the world. It made sense on a tremendous number of levels, and it's not terribly unfair because it's not like as a user you don't know. It's not like you've, you know, it's not like giving you it's not like the cell companies early on where they'd give you these killer contracts so that you would pick a phone number with them, and then at the end of the 2 years, they would double the price of your contract, and you said, well, I'm going to Verizon, and AT&T would go, okay, have fun getting a new phone number. What? What do you mean a new phone number? But this is my number, you know. And that was something that HP, totally got distracted.
Verizon.
Thank you. That was something that was unfair practices. That was like, and obviously they changed the laws to change that. And I think everybody's happier for it. Whereas I don't think anything that HP is doing is unfair. It's just that, like you said, you do get a discount on the piece of hardware as a consumer. And, you know, and, but you, it's like buying a cell phone.
You
basically,
which really says, I mean, if you think about it, it says, you know, if you don't print a lot, it doesn't cost you a lot.
Exactly. And, yeah, exactly. Actually, it's, I mean, it's not. And,
so the
and
value literally is tied to how much you use it.
Right. And, you know, some would argue, but it's not really as funny of a joke when you put it that way. It's kind of a, and you know, I like to see you squeam.
That's fair. So we got completely distracted from.
Yes.
So you think that the iPhone plastic is coming in?
I think so. Oh, well, okay.
You think that the iPhone math is going to remain a myth.
I think so.
And you think that the iPhone 5S is a complete duh. Why did this even make the rumor mill?
Yeah. I'm going to say 75% chance iPhone plastic gets announced in October. It's just it makes a lot of sense. I haven't and it's been repeated by more credible sites than, you know, just your like a random Taiwanese website posted this on there. You know, there seems to be a tiny bit of validity to it, but it could be as simple as, you know, the execs at Apple got a little scared, asked, you know, realistically how much would it cost to make, you know, a million of these. And so they did a really big run. You know, that's something that they do frequently. And, you know, by a big run, I mean, they made 10,000.
You have as much money as they do, you can do that.
Right. I'm almost sure that that's what happened. Now the question is, what do they do with that information? And I'm not positive that it's going to actually turn into a product, but part of the reason I'm hedging is because I know that just a month ago we predicted that they wouldn't launch any new products. They just do iterative updates, and I don't want to be wrong. So I don't.
Good reason. Wait a minute. Yeah.
But
it's still January. If you want to change your mind, I think it's still early enough in the process.
You know, and that's why I'm giving it I'm hedging a little bit. I'm doing with I'm starting to invest in longs, but I'm still keeping a little bit back in shorts just in case to cushion the blow.
All right. Fair enough. That's funny. It's a big company. And yeah. Anything else you want to hit on with the Apple?
No. I don't know. Lenovo's gonna buy BlackBerry, by the way. Or they both parties have admitted that there have been thoughts discussed in Lenovo buying the hardware production capabilities that BlackBerry or that RIM has, and literally buying the BlackBerry, buying the BlackBerry production facilities and people and whatnot, which once again I'm hoping doesn't happen because make me wrong, but it doesn't mean I can't report it. So I'm not going to talk about that for very long because it seems like we'll see what happens.
We will see. So a company that's been struggling for a while, speaking of dying companies, is officially dying. THQ, the gaming company.
Yeah.
They're done, man.
They're done.
They've been falling for like a little while now, just really struggling.
Now, did they get a name change, or did they get bought by bought? What was the deal there?
So they, as you would expect with a game company, they are really a bunch of sub companies,
right?
And so all of those are getting broken up. So, for example, Sega is going to buy Relic, which is known for Company of Heroes and Warhammer 40K.
Nice.
Crytek is going to buy Homefront. Okay. Ubisoft.
Crytek, you know where they're located? Los Gatos, California. I used to drive by them every day to work. Sorry.
There you go. So let's see here. Ubisoft is going to buy THQ Montreal and all of the South Park assets. So maybe that South Park game will actually come true.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Take-Two is going to buy the Evolve assets. And the I think it's Koch Media will buy Volition of the Saints Row fame. And
right.
Metro Last Light assets.
Huh.
Yeah, so anyway, so they're going through bankruptcy, and they're going to try to find some buyers, maybe, for what's left.
I didn't link the article to this, but Atari's going bankrupt again this week as well. They filed Chapter 11 in New York, which isn't nearly as cool because it's not in California. But yeah, man, that's crazy. You know.
Yeah. So except
at the same time, all the products are staying around and they're going to strong companies that most people like. You know, isn't Sega still a subsidiary of Nintendo? I thought they were. I know they were at one point. I'm not sure if they haven't. If they still are.
Let's see here. Wikipedia, Sega. They did. They might have just sold a bunch of stuff to Nintendo.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Let's see here. They're subsidiary of Sega Sammy Holdings. Well, let's see here. Company origins from 1940 to 1982. 82 to 89, they kicked butt. 89 to 2000, they had the Mega Drive. The Sega Saturn, the Sega Dreamcast. And then they made a shift to third-party developers in 2001 to 2005.
Well, it's the reason why Sonic and Mario go to the Olympics is this. So I know that, I mean, this isn't crazy talk. I know this actually, Nintendo bought something from it, from Sega.
Yeah, so no, I would say that Sega is still a separate company.
Huh.
But they don't do hardware anymore. They just do software.
But did they...
So they might have sold their hardware stuff.
To Nintendo? Maybe. Sold the Dreamcast? Well, but I know that Nintendo obviously has the rights to make Sega game or you know use Sonic and a bunch of their other IP, so it's not like
or Sega has permission to use Nintendo stuff in their games they make for Nintendo. Yeah, so right. they're like EA now. They're just a third party developer.
Mm.
They are a third party developer.
Right.
Which it looks like they went through some huge
shifts. There probably was like a brief period there where like Nintendo owned a huge chunk of them before they spun them off into somebody else. They probably I don't know the ins and outs. I'm actually probably going to do some research in that because I don't want to keep talking out of my side of my mouth. But interesting.
Yeah, they did talk about selling to. A bunch of companies, including Microsoft and EA Arts. But they all eventually, they joined with someone else. Yeah, so there you go. So, no, they're not owned by Nintendo.
Okay.
But they develop for them.
Well, all right.
So cool. They're owned by them in that way.
Right.
There you go. There's your clearly also not our domain of expertise.
Yeah.
Jeez. just interesting. We have maybe a clue. No, we don't. anything else happening amazing in your life?
I've gotten really into sound systems in the last week.
That's been like a
big deal for me. I don't know what a light switch flipped, as it were, and
wow,
I suddenly
cars that are really loud.
Well, not even cars. I actually want home entertainment type sound systems.
No, I'm just saying, like, you know, guys typically they'll get back into like the whole music and the video, and then they want the car, and you know,
right, so that's dream.
Yeah. You're living it, man.
Yeah. The car is probably gonna.
When you get in the 4K TV, that's what I want to know.
Oh man, I probably not.
Are you having it in time for the Super Bowl?
No, probably not. I'm not a big screen TV guy. It's never been my battle. I probably will be eventually, because let's face it.
I was going to say, you know, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I mean, give it a few years. At this point, I don't.
Let me put it this way. The reason why you don't like it is that you haven't seen a high-quality picture
from
a large TV yet.
That's actually very true.
The second you see that, you're going to be like, I'm in. Here's my money. You can't take it fast enough.
I am so like, yeah, that's exactly how I work. It was like the Paperwhite. I was like, e-readers are the stupidest thing in the world. And until they finally got the technology that evidently I care about, I was like, here's my money. be quiet and take my money. So I'm sure that will happen eventually, but all of a sudden, you know what it was? I read an Instructable early in the week on how to make a portable boombox, which I realized is redundant because all boomboxes are portable. But that's like the definition. But it was cool because it was like the first time I'd ever actually seen somebody go like, here's an amp, here are speakers, here's the different steps. And it was just well put together, but I felt like he was missing something and I couldn't quite figure out what it was. And so I started doing research. And I finally figured out, the problem is it's the crossover circuit that separates your frequencies for your woofers and your tweeters. And all of a sudden, like, it suddenly clicked that I finally knew enough about, like, signal processing and circuitry and electricity and wattage and all of that stuff where everything I was reading made sense. There weren't any pieces where I was like, why does this do this? And I had all the basic information. Over the last week, I'll spend like an hour or two a day, like reading different reviews, reading about this technology versus this technology, doing all this stuff. Because I suddenly figured out that it doesn't have to be a black box for me anymore. And I like having decent, loud music. Like I that's enjoyable for me. So it was like, but sound systems are crazy expensive. Unless you buy all the components separately online, make sure that they all match, and then build the box, you know, build the cabinet for the sound system yourself, and then you can get a $1,000 system for $200 or $300.
You're saying that I could commission you to build me a sound system and actually save some money?
Give me a couple of months because I'm still in the process of figuring out. You see, like, one big problem, and I had to go to Fry's today to figure this out, was I was like, I don't know what a 100-watt sound system versus a 1,000-watt sound system sounds like. I don't know how loud either of those are. So, you know, it's like I can tell you, I can do all the calculations. I know how much heat it generates. I know how much amperage it draws. I know what kind of size circuits you'll need. What does it actually sound like? So that's the big. So my plan is over the next couple of next month or two is to actually do some research and then hopefully sometime in the next 3 or 4 months actually start to piece together a couple of speakers and then get an amp and some. See, what I really want is I want a Bluetooth like a 7-channel amp, like 1,000-watt 7-channel amp with Bluetooth connectivity, so I can just, you know, have my iPhone and connect it or connect my computer or whatever. You know, that's the ideal. But those are crazy expensive. Turns out you put Bluetooth on anything and it quadruples the price.
Sweet.
So figuring out how to do that in an affordable way will become difficult. And because I don't like anything being easy, I'm also trying to figure out how to embed Arduinos in it in a way that would actually give it some added value. And so this has been a big project for me. Hopefully at some point I'll settle down and just buy a sound system that is right for me, that fits the environment that I will be using it in, and just saves me money, as opposed to spending way too much on a system that I'll never use to its potential, but will make me feel fuzzy inside because I get so
yeah,
that's what my goal is, to talk myself down over the next month or two to get reasonable.
I like it.
Funny. Anyways, so yes, my goal is for you to be able to commission me at some point to do okay. that. What about you? What are you working on?
So right now, my wife and I's schedule is one such where I don't work on anything.
Okay.
We just, for whatever reason, the beginning part of the year is always jam-packed full of events and activities and commitments. And so the best thing for me to do is to not do anything outside of those. Examples I give is, like, on Sunday, we literally will, like, we will start at 7:45 in the morning and finish somewhere around 8, 9 o'clock at night.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so I just, you know, you just kind of, I'm not going to worry about it. Same with the evenings. I managed to fill them all up with stuff, but after, like, spring break is about when the schedule will ease up.
Nice.
Which is why we're recording on a Saturday instead of on a Sunday. That's one of the factors.
So when I'm doing spring break in Cabo, you will be finally having your break from crazy life. April?
Depending on when your spring break is, we may have to skip a week or do a best of show.
Maybe.
We'll have to talk about this. Anyways, everybody, you don't have to listen to our planning session, really. It's okay. It's all right. So what we would like to say, though, is thank you for joining us, and thank you for rooting for the 49ers. We really appreciate it as they go on to beat whatever that other team is. Doesn't really matter.
Stupid people.
Okay, Ray Lewis sounds like a cool guy. I'll admit that. Okay,
I'm not going to get into it.
Sounds like a good player. Anyways, where was I? Oh, yes, 49ers are awesome. I'm James Furlow. My brother, who is not my competitor, not my adversary, but instead my
teammate.
Thank you. It's like, I gotcha. Don't have anything with this. That guy, his name is Matthew Furlow. And finally, we will talk next time. Oh, man. Could I stumble any harder through that part?
That's pretty awesome. I liked it.
So thanks for joining us. We're not adversaries. Can't tell you what the other word is, but we're not that.
yeah.